Ed and I are going to be your leaders for this session. In the spirit of the fifth tradition to carry the message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during the session. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening or attend another session. We ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone, and you're going to get to have a seat right up here, so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. And this is underlined. Please do not tamper with the recording equipment. Will you please join me in opening the session with a serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The essay purpose is Sexaholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and help others to achieve sexual sobriety. Ed and I will share a few minutes on our topic. Then we're going to open the meeting for sharing or questions. Again, we ask that those who choose to share, please come up to the table, have a seat, so that when we listen to the recording in the future, we can follow the discussion. We ask that you be mindful of the time to allow others a chance to share. All righty. I think we're about ready to begin officially. Would you like to begin? I'd like to turn this over to Ed from, I started to say from Louisville, but I don't know if that's where he claims home now or not.
Good afternoon, I'm Ed, I'm a sexaholic.
Hi, Ed.
Spotty dates January 1, 1991. And I consider my home group Lexington, Kentucky. Since I've been married, my wife and I live in Shelbyville, Kentucky, which is about halfway between Lexington and Louisville, so I split time between the two opportunities for meeting. And I think it's probably appropriate to have this topic this afternoon because sponsorship is what recovery is all about. I have found that AA has produced a pamphlet called Questions and Answers on Sponsorship, and I found that to be an excellent piece of resource to turn to, along with what's said in our white book, to have a guideline as far as what being a sponsor is all about and what sponsees in relation to sponsors have to do with. The whole reason there's a fellowship comes out of the sponsorship experience. In fact, this pamphlet talks about Bill being aware of, he had a thought when he was in Akron where AA got started, and he said to himself, you need another alcoholic to talk to. You need another alcoholic just as much as he needs you. And that's true for me as a sexaholic. I can't stay sober if I don't have you guys. And if I don't have the opportunity to pass on to somebody else how I found freedom from lust, then it's very soon possible for me to forget whence I came from. The most valuable thing in my life is to be able to find that desperate sex drunk that wants to know how to find the freedom from that first drink, you know, and somebody to tell me, which took a number of years to really get it, it's not about acting out, it's about lusting. It's the first fantasy, thought, that I need to recognize And it takes a while to even know what lusting is. It's good to have somebody to speak into your mindset, i.e. somebody shared with you honestly, so that you can share back with them. That's lusting, and that's what needs to be stopped. It took me a long time to recognize that, because the majority of experiences that are a part of the world I live in talks about, well, you got to stop acting out. Well, that's the end of a drunk. And I got to stop way before I get drunk. And it's a difficult thing sometimes to know. If I feed the lust hunger, I will get drunk and I will act out. And to have somebody really in a desperate, miserable place, like I was the first day I showed up in SA in 1989. You know, I didn't know anybody else was like me. And I really wanted to find somebody else that had a clue and knew that there was hope. I discovered that in a small meeting on a Saturday morning in Lexington, Kentucky. And one of the people that was in that room that day, sitting here this afternoon, and he was a source. He had some information that he could pass on to me and give me the beginning point of how to stay away from that first drink. One of the things that I heard in that first meeting is you got to give up sex with self. And to me, that meant masturbate. Today, I know it's so much more than that. But that was a phenomenal requirement to me. You know, I didn't want to stop masturbating. That was my ace in the hole, my backup. I just wanted to not be involved in infidelity, not be involved with the prostitutes, not be using the pornography, those kind of things. I thought, well, you know, you got to have some relief at some point, and so why would I want to give up masturbating? Well, it's because that's the only way you're going to get sober, but it's not the behavior. I got to back up even further than that and deal with the fantasies. I think it's real important to notice that in our problem reading, the word fantasy is used repeatedly. There's a reason for that, because that's what must be stopped. And I needed a sponsor. I needed somebody ahead of me on the path to give me that little nugget. Also, I was given the idea that it's not a sex problem. It's a lust problem. I'm addicted to lust. If it was a sex problem, that's going to destroy one of the most beautiful gifts I have, my sexual instinct, which is very appropriately expressed in the confines of a committed marriage. And I'm really grateful that I get to enjoy that privilege today. I went a number of years single again and had to stay abstained from that kind of expression. And I didn't die. What a concept. SA introduced me to that. And the members that were sober could encourage me, along with our literature, that it was possible. You know, there's no other place more consistently than SA that's given me that message. The message is, I stay sober, I get to freedom, I gain a relationship with a power greater than myself that gives me the power to stay sober. And then I pass that on. Pass it on is a powerful little phrase, because I can't keep it if I don't give it away. And consistently. One of the deals about sponsorship is I develop a group of people that I can call and I can share with. I can hear what they're struggling with and they can hear what I'm struggling with. It takes more than just one other guy, although that's a good starting point. And so being a sponsor and helping that sponsee relationship grow by showing that sponsee what I was shown, and particularly getting into the literature. And I'll never forget, I met Bill S. 2001 in D.C. And he pointed out to me that the textbook of recovery, Alcoholics Anonymous, correlated with our white book. Our white book did not replace the textbook of recovery. That little nugget was a powerful piece of information to be passed on to me. And it's played a role in me being able to pass that on to a number of other fellows. And it's things like that that you can't get that support, you can't get that encouragement, you can't get that validation unless it's another sex drunk. That's how the alcoholics got this fellowship that they have going, and that's how we get ours going. And it's working with another sexaholic and not keeping him dependent on you. but passing on to him what you've been given, and then trying to get him to the place where he can start making that connection with somebody else and continue the legacy. The program of recovery is the 12 steps. Start with one. The program is not the fellowship. The program is not sponsorship. The program is not service. All those are added to and are very important, but the program of action that will change you and bring you to the freedom are the 12 steps. And somebody needs to be present and involved to pass that on and reinforce it when you forget. That is the kind of information that over the years I have heard by being in meetings, having a sponsor that could point that out to me, encourage me, challenge me when they heard my thinking had gotten off of the beam. And sometimes I don't even know it, but a guy that's got a connection with me over a period of times can speak into my insanity. I've got to deal with the insanity before the first drink, because by the time I get to the first drink, you know, I have no control and I'm going to acting out. So that's another thing that's real important about what a sponsor does with a sponsee as far as teaching inventory and listening to the inventory, because doing a four step is just the beginning. Taking inventory self-examination is a lifetime discipline, and having somebody in my life that modeled that and was available to me to facilitate that is a real crucial role. You know, I need somebody that knows my story. I don't start over every time I talk to them. And it's not necessary that we get into a lot of detail, but it's necessary to have somebody that's confidential, trustworthy, knows what's going on, that I can relate to and talk with and listen to and respect what they've got to say. I don't know whether I have a lot more to say at this point, but those are kind of things that I wanted to share, and the places where I've experienced people that have got what I want have been the places where there's been a group of people that are working the steps, that are fellowshipping, that are talking to each other regularly, and it's like my chosen family. And the family I came out of didn't have the strength and the guidance for me that I needed to live healthily, and I need to be a part of a growing family that has the kind of stuff. There's accountability, there's structure. These are things that all start from sponsor-sponsee relationship. And we're all moving toward having genuine intimacy. Sex is optional, but intimacy is not. And intimacy is learned in its basics between a sponsor and a sponsee. That's been my experience. Thanks.
Thanks, Seth. Oops, sorry. Time for I'm a sexaholic. I've been sober 15 years, almost 16, coming up this summer, or soon, because it's around the corner. I finally have learned to quit counting the days, because I'm realizing that it really is just a one day at a time kind of thing. Sponsorship is something that I would probably never have thought was as important as it is. And I think the longer I'm in the fellowship, the more I believe the sponsorship is crucial. Because I can rock along on my own and go to meetings and listen to really good things and read the literature and get in my head. Well, that's what caused me problems to begin with, was staying in my own head and not sharing, you know, something with what's going on. Because I had been pretty good at solving solutions or coming up with solutions. That was until I came up with this problem of sexaholism. And I believe I was in the program at least a year before I realized in the purpose that it talks about the only requirement for membership is to stop lusting and become sexually sober. How could I have been going to meetings and listening and not really hearing that wasn't about sex or all the affairs that I had or all the fantasies that I'd had in my head? It was about lusting after what someone else had that I didn't have. My very first meeting, I walked into my primary issues have been around affairs with married men or unavailable, emotionally unavailable people. And I walked into a room full of men at the Blue Portable. For those of you who've been in Nashville for a while, it's no longer Blue. It's now just a Portable, but still there. And I really thought, my God, what a joke is this? It's their fault that I'm in this situation to begin with. Why am I in this room? And those wonderful men did a newcomers meeting for me, and it was about halfway through the meeting, another woman came in. She sat down beside me, and she ended up having to leave early, but she wrote a note and gave me your name. Her name was Martha. And I really felt like that it was kind of a God thing. It was another woman, and trust me, I don't know the Bible well, but I do remember the name Martha, the Bible. And in talking with her, it was like another person really, I mean, the men made sense to me. I could hear their stories and find the same emptiness. But it was talking with that one person one-on-one and sharing my experiences as I walked through the steps. Frankly, I thought I'd do those 12 steps pretty quickly and I'd be healed and I wouldn't have to go to those meetings anymore. And I found out that wasn't quite the case. But one of the things I learned about my sponsor was she wasn't there to just listen to me run on and on and on at the mouth. Matter of fact, I called her one day and I was really kind of in distress and needed to share something with her, and she said, oh, I'm really sorry, I'm walking out the door, we can talk later this evening. And I'm like, and she said, I'll talk to you this evening, I'll give you a call. And I got off the phone and I thought, well, how rude, you know, she's my sponsor, she's supposed to help me with this problem. And I tried, at that time there were only about two other women in the program, and tried a couple of other women, they weren't home, and then it occurred to me, oh, I could talk to God. I could. And it was one of those reminders for me that I didn't have to stay in my head. I could talk with my higher power. And for me, that was God. So the sponsor showed me that the way to work through the steps, sponsorship can be a way to develop intimacy and develop a friendship, but that's not the primary goal of a sponsor. The primary sponsor's role is to help you know how to walk through the steps so that when those new folks come into your meetings, then you're going to be able to help them walk through the steps just like your sponsor did. I think that's a hard thing sometimes people, because I think, at least for me, having intimacy issues and thinking it was hard to have friends, I thought I just needed a friend. I thought I just needed a really good friend that I could call up whenever I had a problem. And I did develop a friendship and have a friendship with my sponsor, but it was not the main reason. And I think that's as you're working with sponsees or sponsees as you're looking for a sponsor, it's about learning how to work this program. That's what it's all about, because what I've found is it really is not knowing how to be rigorously honest and know that that other person isn't going to run away. I think that's what I really believed, if I was honest with somebody. And when I told my sponsor my first step, I just thought she was going to be so disgusted that she probably wouldn't want to talk to me anymore. And then she encouraged me to then go to a meeting and share it. And I'm like, she's got to be kidding me. And that's what a sponsor is there, to give you that support, to know that you can do those things, that you're not by yourself. And I think if you don't have a sponsor, that you're missing a very valuable tool. A sponsor is really there, I think, just to be one of those guardians, those little special people that are put in your life. Sometimes down the road, you might want to change sponsors, and that's okay. That's just what I've found, though, it's not particularly good. You don't need to go answer shopping. You don't need to call all these different people in the program because you didn't like what your sponsor said. So they go, I'll call, you know, this person over there. And they kind of give you similar advice. You still don't like it. So you call another person or two. And then you start hearing the same thing. You go, well, maybe my sponsor's right. That's the other thing, is to know that I could take direction. I didn't have to control the situation. I'd always thought I had to control things, and letting go of control was a big thing for me to do. The other thing, from a sponsor's perspective, I had a sponsee call me one night in tears after she'd acted out. She called me at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I've told a sponsee they can call me anytime, no matter when. But don't call me after the fact. You know, call me ahead of time, okay? And so it's to help those sponsees know of ways that they can walk through those hard times by themselves. I think the thing that I've learned, too, is we in Nashville are growing with the number of women that are coming to this program. I used to think that men would be upset if I came to the meetings. And then I finally learned, thanks to my sponsor, that, you know, it's about my recovery, and they could talk with their sponsors if there was a problem, you know, with me going to the meeting. And as the number of women grew, we now have women's only meetings. And I was telling some women earlier, I used to be very resentful of that. But if I had to get sober with a bunch of men, they had to too. Yeah, it just seemed only fair to me. But they seemed to think it would be nice to have just a women's only meeting. So we're blessed in Nashville that we do have a continuing growing number of women in the program. But whether it's 1 or 100, we have to spread the message. And the only way we can spread the message is encouraging new people to become sponsors. And if you're not a sponsor and you've got some sobriety, I would encourage you to talk with your sponsor and find out what would be a good thing for you to do. It's one of the best ways I've found to keep sober. Because you were saying, Ed, it's a reminder for me hearing their stories, their struggles, that help me go back and go, oh yeah, I've been there. I know that. And so I think it's something that you're missing in part of your recovery if you haven't had a chance or taken that chance to help another newcomer through that program, because that's how we continue to grow and how you individually continue to grow as well. And I think probably, how are we doing on time here? I think what I'd like for us to do now is just kind of open it up for sharing for questions about what you might have questions about being a sponsor or as a sponsee, how you might go about finding a sponsor, or even sharing some experience, strength, and hope that you've had in either of those roles. So if you would, because we are recording, we're going to move the microphone down close to this end, and don't be shy. I know that we're all, you know, a little shy sometimes, but come on down. Here we go.
I'm Dick. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi, Heather.
Our community doesn't seem to have a lot of people who are in sponsorship relationships. We have a lot of people who go to meetings and don't have sponsors. So my question to the two of you is, how do you encourage people to get into sponsorship relationships?
You want to take that?
I'm Ed. I'm a sexaholic.
I think probably the biggest thing for me would be when there's somebody new and I'm working with somebody and I know that they've made progress through the steps to at least have gone far enough to have done a four-step, fifth step, then that's somebody that can immediately start passing on what they've learned. And when somebody new shows up, it doesn't have to be me that's the one that's going to pass on information. And in the small communities that I'm a part of, I tend to try to deflect and encourage somebody that I know that's got some time and experience. Here's somebody that needs some help. Here's somebody that needs to hear what you've discovered. And I think that's how I can play the role of encouraging a community to grow.
I was just going to add to it. I think sometimes people think that you've got to be some kind of expert to be a sponsor. Well, that's just not true. I mean, to be a sponsor means that you're working your program and you have a sponsor. And so I think there's a lot of fear about it. I think there's also maybe fear, too, that, well, you don't really know that other person. It doesn't mean you have to have that person, you know, come live with you. You can meet them for a cup of coffee. You can meet them in a public place. I think it's a lot of fear, and so I would encourage you in your group, maybe after being through this weekend, of continue to talk with other people how it works for them. And maybe one of the things you can do to help your group is to take that role on and maybe not even call it a sponsor, but just be willing to get together with one or two other people outside the meeting and share your experience, strength, and hope, I think might be a way to bridge that, just to meet in between meetings. We're so lucky in Nashville that there's really no excuse not to get to a meeting in Nashville. I mean, we've got three meetings a day, pretty much. And, you know, but there's times in between, I think, that would be good, just to get together for coffee. You know, and I think then it can grow from there.
My name's Jim. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi,
my sobriety date is 9/23/2000. And I just have a comment because when I got to the program 10 years ago, there was one meeting a week in my community, and there was essentially no recovery, no sobriety in that meeting. And my hair was on fire, and I didn't really have a lot of choice. So I read everything that I could read. And discovered that I needed to have a sponsor. Well, I thought I could do without that, so I tried to work the steps myself, but when I got to the fifth step, I needed somebody. Eventually, I found a sponsor, but he didn't live in our community. He lived some distance away. And he began to work me through the steps. And it was not too long after that that my wife dragged me to an international convention in Nashville, 8 years ago now? Something like that? And another person from my fellowship came to that at convention too, and we saw the solution for the first time. We still had this one meeting a week where everybody would just come and whine about how they'd acted out that week, and there was really, you know, nobody doing anything as far as recovery. So when we got back from Nashville, this other fellow and I, he had found a sponsor at the convention, and I was already sponsored for probably a year or so by that time, and we just started talking about sponsorship in the meetings, and we started talking about working the steps in the meetings. And other people weren't real comfortable with that at first, but eventually came around and decided that they began to want what we were talking about, not necessarily what we had. And gradually people began to work the steps, and we were able to share what other people were sharing with us. Now, in that same community, we have 7 meetings a week, and everybody's sponsored. And we continue to make sure everybody's sponsored in a number of different ways. We'll have meetings where the topic is sponsorship, where everybody gets to talk about what they benefit from as far as sponsorship goes. We have newcomers meetings when people come in and explain sponsorship to them there. We have meetings that address the steps and the traditions as topics, and you can't really work the steps without a sponsor. And so it has become a culture of sponsorship where we are. And then individually, you know, one-on-one, when I'm talking to people, I'll just ask them, hey, do you have a sponsor? You know, the new people that have been there for a month or two or less. And if they don't, I'll suggest to them who would be a good sponsor for them. And then when I go home, I'll call whoever I just suggested and ask them to get in touch with them to try to create, to push that. And then, you know, the next time I see them, a week or two later, I'll ask them again, hey, do you have a sponsor? And I'll even do it in front of other people, you know, to try to bring it to the forward and push the envelope a little bit on them. And you know, there are a few of us who kind of take it upon ourselves to make sure. I need those meetings for my recovery, and I need them to be good. And part of them being good is other people working the steps and being sponsored. So it's really my responsibility to take care of my meetings and to talk to those people in there honestly about my experience, because really working the steps is the only thing that saved my life. And really, I'm just a product of good sponsorship. I've been fortunate to have a couple of excellent sponsors that are there for me when I need them. And they're willing to be honest with me. So that's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
I just want to add a comment that came to my mind. My sponsor, in response to my comment about the meetings I was going to, had a lot of sharing of the problem, and it didn't seem like anybody was really talking any solution. And his response was, well, have a literature meeting. And so we've done that in the two meetings that I regularly go to. We spend the first half hour in the literature, and somewhere in the literature it says you always have a sober person at the meeting if you have the literature. Hmm. And so that makes for a good foundation to build some solutions.
Thank you. I'm a sexaholic. My problem is John.
John.
And thank you both for sharing. It's been a very good meeting. And when I first came into SA, I had been in two other 12-step programs and continue to be active in them now, today. But anyway, I had been in two other 12-step programs for many years. And it was kind of the tradition in AA. You had one sponsor, you know, and you got it all from the one person. And so the people in SA started suggesting to me, because it was hard enough for me to call one person, you know. Now they wanted me to call two or three people, you know. And I didn't want to make those calls, you know. But it was suggested to me that I call more than one person, you know. And that's how I got into the bizarre, for me at that time, bizarre situation. And I guess it's still a little bizarre, but anyway, of actually having more than one sponsor in SA. It's the only program where I have more than one sponsor. And as a matter of fact, at one point I had about five of them, and two of them resigned, you know, but I still have three. But anyway, the point is, these three guys, I've worked with them for a long time. But anyway, when number one isn't home, I call number two. Number two isn't home, I call number three. And then hope that one of them calls back, maybe, you know. But at least I've done my part, you know, if I make that one that one call. But AA is my number one program, but sexaholism may be my number one. I know it's my number one addiction, you know. And it was the hardest one to deal with. But nevertheless, AA is still the number one program. And the number one sponsor is still the AA sponsor. And the literature that I read most of is still the AA literature, you know, including the grapevine, which I carry around with me as a security blanket in case I'm uncomfortable at some of the other 12-step meetings that I go to. I'm never uncomfortable in AA, but I am sometimes uncomfortable, particularly there's a new one that I'm in now that I won't mention that I'm very uncomfortable in. But anyway, thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, John. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Matt, and I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic. In my addiction, I would be very kind and gentle with myself if I said that I was not a good parent. The truth is, I was a rotten parent for most of my addiction. And the reason why I was not a good parent at all was because I didn't have a handbook. And my wife was just best parent ever, kind of like my mother. She was just the best parent ever. I've come to realize that that's not the truth. They did the best they could, but I was not qualified, so I did not try to be a parent. And then eventually I realized that to be a good parent, I have to be on this, show them how perfect I can be and lead a great example. And I've since found out that it's not being a good parent at all either. And the reason I mention these things is because it's, you know, I kind of realized what it's like to be a good parent. And I use those, the things that I've learned in being a sponsor is, you know, I tell my children, and I still luckily have two young children as opposed to one who's a college graduate to work on now. My fellowship here has given me an opportunity, a second chance at life to do good things for my young children. And it's that, you know, I'm going to make mistakes, you know. And as a sponsor, I'm going to make mistakes, but that's okay. But I've got to try, and I have to be genuine. That's one thing that the most important thing in my life now is for someone to if somebody said I'm genuine, because I've been a fraud for so long, and now that's what I do. I don't know if I became a sponsor too early. Sometimes I don't know if I have too many sponsees. I've stopped at three, but the main thing I got to do is I got to do the best that I can, and I have to be true to myself. And I can't try to be exactly like my sponsor, and I've got a great sponsor. You know, I have to be true to myself, because for whatever reason, whether they were told that I was going to be their temporary sponsor and I became their permanent sponsor, or they came to me, they found something in me that they connected with. And if I try to be a sponsor that I am not, then I'm doing them a disservice. It doesn't mean I can't try to be a little more assertive. I'm a little bit nurturing, you know. I can try to be a little bit more assertive, but I have to do it within my own realm. I can't be somebody that I'm not. You can't give what you don't got. So I have to be true to myself. That's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Tanya. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic.
And
as a someone who's been sponsoring people for about a year, year and a half, one of the things that I find frustrating is my sponsors don't stay sober. My sponsorees don't stay sober. My sponsors are sober. My sponsorees don't stay sober. And it's really ego deflating because, of course, it's all about me, and I must be doing something wrong as a sponsor, or they would be staying sober. Well, then it occurred to me that the first 4 years I was in program, I couldn't stay sober. And my sponsor actually fired me twice. The same sponsor fired me twice. And then when I asked her the third time, she said no. And so I went to another sponsor, and I've been sober ever since. But it wasn't the sponsor that kept me sober. They helped me work the steps. And in that sense, they helped me stay sober. But both of them did a good job at that. The difference in me staying sober was my attitude. And I had to come to that pretty much by myself. I couldn't make the sponsors couldn't make the decision for me that I had had enough and I needed to surrender. I had to come to that of my own accord. So it helps me remember that I can only do so much as a sponsor. My job is to carry the message and to help my sponsorees work the steps. Whether they stay sober or not ultimately is up to them. But I've never fired a sponsoree, and I've been tempted, but I haven't. But you know, I can't keep a person sober. I can only carry the message. Thanks.
Thanks, Tony.
Hi, my name is Al, a recovering lustaholic. Thank you both of you very much for your words. I got a great deal from them, and I'd like a reaction from each of you to my question marks. By God's grace, I have 17 years, one day at a time. And I come from Westchester County, New York, where the sobriety is very, very healthy. Our Sunday night meeting, we have on average 30 people, more than 100 years sobriety in the room on any night, six days a week meetings. So things are, by one standard, pulsating. By another standard, maybe not. And a small group of us, just today I spoke with someone, we'll meet on Thursday to talk about this, that the word that struck me about today is culture of sponsorship. And, you know, okay, what? And we're discovering that sponsors aren't all the same at all. And yes, it's fine to get a couple of steps done and share your experiences and call that sponsorship. But I've talked with sponsees recently who were fired by sponsors for making rules that aren't rules. It's all Lone Ranger sponsor. And we're thinking about going to the AA literature, getting a few common principles. I know sponsors who don't work the steps with sponsees. And maybe in some way, I don't quite know how, meeting. Having sponsor meetings, volunteer, those who want to come. And just sharing what a sponsor does and having some minimal hopes and expectations for what a sponsor does. I don't know where we're going to go with that. I don't know. I guess my real question is, are we just adding and complicating things? AA didn't have it. Are we just adding something that's really unnecessary? And if that's the case, I certainly don't want it. By the other hand, if there's something we can do to up our culture of sponsorship, I'd like to do that. So maybe you could just react. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm Priscilla, and I'm still a sexaholic. You know, I think there's a lot to be said for that.
My only concern or question, I guess, would be, is I think sometimes people feel so overburdened with yet one more meeting that might be an issue. But I think we probably don't talk enough about sponsorship. Because I know sometimes if I have an issue with a sponsee or two, you know, whether on their progress on something or I'm not calling. I do call other people, but I think it would be helpful, perhaps even just in general meetings, talking more about sponsorship and some general. And I think this pamphlet from AA has some really good reminders. I know for me, when I went back through before this, it seemed to have some really good guidelines. So, but I think you're right. Maybe we do kind of look for things to make our own little rules. I don't think there's... I, of course, want to take other people's inventory for, you know, firing sponsees for breaking rules. But I don't know. I think that's a fascinating discussion. This whole topic, when we came up with it, kind of made me stop and think, what do we really mean by a culture of sponsorship? So I appreciate that thought. I think it'd be worth exploring.
I'm Adam, sexaholic. One thing that came to my mind when I was preparing, there's a comment here in this pamphlet. It says, sponsorship responsibility is unwritten and informal, but a basic part of the AA approach to recovery through the 12 steps. And so that makes it a group's responsibility beyond the individual. And if you don't have very good meetings, then that may be reason for a group conscience to find out, you know, what's going on here and what can we do, because the whole purpose of a meeting is to carry the message to the still suffering sexaholic. And I spend a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I see the evidence of group consciences. There's another little phrase, stick with the winners. If you don't have very many winners, then, you know, what are you going to do? But if you do, then, you know, it's an opportunity as an individual to seek that person out and ask where their hope comes from and what's their strength about. And that's an individual responsibility, but, you know, there's group and then there's individual to really nurture this culture of sponsorship. I don't think we need any more rules. We've got a very good set of principles called the 12 traditions, and they work quite well.
I'm Bob. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi, Bob.
I came into SA in 1984, muddled around for about 7 years, and then took some time off to ruin my life. And I came back about 2 years ago. Back in 1984, Milwaukee didn't have a strong sponsorship emphasis, and it was kind of hit and miss. And when I came back 10 years later, actually more than 10 years later, there was this emphasis on sponsorship. It was like, do you have a sponsor? Do you have a sponsor? Do you have a sponsor? And I'd always say, no. Like, I don't need a sponsor. I was here before all these guys were, and I had this big idea of myself. And finally, one day, a woman after the meeting approached and said, Bob, you need to get a sponsor. And I said, look, it's a suggested program of recovery. There's no rule that says I have to have a sponsor. Why do I need somebody telling me what to do? And, a couple months later, the light went on, and I found my feet hanging over the abyss of another major relapse. And it nearly ruined my second marriage. I was literally ready to go over the edge again, and it was the point of no return. And I ran for a sponsor. I grabbed the nearest guy that had a year of sobriety. Be my sponsor, please. The breakthrough for me was I had to quit doing things my way. Knowledge didn't give me power. I had believed knowledge gave me power, that I could recite the book to people and all this. And I wasn't touching myself. I was only looking at pornography and not touching myself. I was sober. Yeah. I didn't have that accountability. I wasn't responsible and accountable to anybody, and it didn't work. I've been sober now for a year and a half by the grace of God. And I'm sponsoring some people, but I question myself. I'm not a hard-nosed kind of guy. In fact, I question myself because I was sitting in a check meeting where one guy I'm sponsoring is laying out why his program isn't working, and one of the guys that has, you know, a whole bunch of years sobriety says, you need to get a good hard sponsor. I was kind of slinking down in my seat. And I looked at him and said, don't look at me, I'm not a hard sponsor. I'm, you know, you do it, you do your program the way, you know, I'm here to tell you what my experience, strength, and hope is. I'm a little confused on that still. I don't know when to, I don't know what a hard sponsor is. And, you know, maybe I should go to an Essanon meeting and figure out how you don't get into somebody's business and tell them how to run their life. I don't know. And I guess that is my question is, what is a hard sponsor? Do I want to be one? I don't know. Thank you.
My name is Andrew Burroughs, and I am a grateful recovering sexaholic.
Hi, Andrew.
I started my recovery in a very highly target-rich environment for sponsors right here in Nashville, and I moved to Green Bay, Wisconsin, which is not a very highly rich and target environment for sponsors. And I'm lucky I have a very good sponsor. I believe he's tough as nails. I like him a lot. One of the things that I noticed from leaving Nashville to going to Green Bay is that there's not a lot of people up there in Green Bay, for one, but the other one is that people just came and they just shared, and then they shut up and they went. And or they would just pull out a book and just start reading the book, and then people talked for a few minutes, and there wasn't no real talking about sponsorship. There was no really talking about the steps. There was no pushing through the steps. And when I came into SA 2 years ago, I guess it's been, I'm not 100% sure, but close to 2 years ago, I was on fire, and I was going to break the world's record for being the best recovered person. I was going to get through all 12 steps in all about, you know, a month or two, and I almost did it. I did pretty good, and I thought I would be cured, but that wasn't the problem. You know, the problem was me. And one of the things that I noticed here in Nashville is that people are always referring back to the steps. They're always referring to sponsorship, you know, having a sponsor, getting a sponsor, and sponsoring other people. And for me, my experience is I'm not a person that's going to push somebody to do the steps, because I can't make someone drink water if they're thirsty. They've got to drink their own water. And I will get sponsees myself. But I say, call me every day, and if they don't call me, I'm not going to go looking for them, because I, you know, they're obviously not really ready for recovery. And when I go back to Wisconsin, to the Green Bay area, the things that I notice is that they're not always doing. So one of the things that I suggested was that we read stuff on steps, at least every meeting, and that we talk about sponsorship. And the meetings are growing slowly. There was 3 a week, and now we got 4 a week, and that's a miracle in itself, because this place, you come here, and when I first came here, there was 56 meetings a week. Now there's close to about 60 some, and to go from being able to do 3 or 4 meetings a day to going to do 1 a day, that's pretty rough on an individual. And but my hope, strength, and experience is by me doing the steps and me talking about the steps and me encouraging people to do the steps, whether they're my sponsees or not, it has a major effect. And I can see already how important it is doing the steps and encouraging people to work on their steps, because if you don't do the steps, you're not really in recovery, because you're not really focusing on yourself. And that's the biggest thing. But I can't force anybody to do it. All that I can do is just live it in my life. And as I live it, other people start seeing it. And so I have people that call me that are not even my sponsees, just because they know I'm working a strong program. And I'm not the best person out there in the world. I think I'm the worst sponsee. I mean, the worst sexaholic out there. But by my hope, strength, and experiences, it's just by doing the steps and putting it into the daily meetings that you have, it really helps people see the need for sponsorship and for recovery. So thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Terry. I'm a recovering sexaholic. About 2.5 years ago, I'm from Buffalo, New York, and about 2.5 years ago, I was really desperate. I had been in the program for 4.5 years, and I couldn't stay sober. And I knew I was really, I hit a bottom again, and I needed to get better. And we only had two meetings in Buffalo at the time, and nobody had 30 days of sobriety in our fellowship, and there was no sponsors. And so I was desperate enough to go a little eastward to Rochester. It's about an hour and a half from Buffalo. And they had, you know, lots of meetings and lots of sponsors and all that kind of stuff. So I got sober over there, and there was another guy from Buffalo who was looking, you know, said, how do you get a sponsor? And he said, well, there aren't any sponsors here, but if, you know, you want to come to Rochester, you know, we can start carpooling. So we did that a little bit, and then we came back, and we formed a meeting, a new meeting in Buffalo, that and we read Practical Guidelines for Group Recovery as our literature. It's a literature study meeting, but that was the first piece of literature that we read. And it does talk in there. It's an awesome pamphlet. You can get through it probably in like 3 weeks, you know. And it's got a lot of good suggestions about that, about how the group finds recovery. And sponsorship and the emphasis on sobriety and sponsorship is really, really key to that. But we still had difficulty because there were two of us and there's lots of sexaholics coming and we couldn't sponsor everybody. So what we started to do was we started to have a monthly speaker meeting. There had never been speaker meetings in Buffalo. But there wasn't anybody sober in Buffalo to speak, so we were importing speakers. And we would say, hey, can you bring some folks with you and people who might be interested in sponsoring folks? So once a month, there were people that you know, that had really good, you know, program and sobriety and recovery and all that. And little by little, some of the folks in Buffalo were starting to get sponsors from, you know, out of town. And so we finally got some traction now where, you know, we have a couple people locally that can sponsor people now. We still don't have enough to sustain all the numbers that we have, but we had to kind of transplant some of that recovery from, you know, an outside area. And that's how we had to do it, but I'm so grateful to our Rochester Fellowship to helping us, because without that lifeline of sponsorship, we were lost. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. We have time for one more person. This will be our last person. Okay. We're about to run out of time.
Brent, I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Brent.
It's good to be here. I haven't sponsored anyone in SA, but I just wanted to encourage those who are that there's a line in the big book that God put on my heart was, he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And when I look at my sponsor, he does that. He enlarges his spiritual life, and sometimes it will irritate or aggravate me because I'm hoping over a certain period of time I get to quit doing steps and start doing what I want. And that's a problem. But I'll say this. I teach at a school, and I feel like I always tell my students I'm the leading student, not the instructor. And the other thing that I've learned as a sponsee is that my sponsor was inviting me into a partnership to grow up and work steps and apply principles in my life. And I guess what I'm trying to share is his modeling recovery, just staying sober and working steps, enlarging his spiritual life, helps me as a sponsee, but it also helps me as a school teacher to pass that on to my students. I may come across as the authority figure, but I'm not. I'm someone that's learned how to practice principles, and sometimes I get a little disturbed in my own recovery, and I want to get sponsees thinking somehow if I had some that would like keep me undisturbed and not sober, and I know that's not the truth, that the best way to be a sponsor is to first learn to be a good sponsee, and I'm trying to learn how to do that, and just want to say that watching a sponsor stay sober was really powerful, because I almost, to be honest, there's times I was hoping people would fall because I didn't want to get sober myself. I hate to admit that, but I was miserable while I was lusting, but I wasn't willing to give it up till I was really through. So that's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, well, bless you. We got time for probably about one more quick one.
Mike, sexaholic. Glad I'm here sober today through God's grace and you people. And three quick thoughts. One, I don't really believe sponsors fire sponsees. I believe sponsees fire sponsors. And it's very simple. If you want to know whether you've been fired or not, ask if your sponsee's sober. if he or she's not, then you've been fired. So that's just a thought. I've been trying that on my group for a while, and we're making some progress with it. Second thought, we do a sponsorship workshop just about every year. We spend a Saturday afternoon about 3 or 4 hours together with a number of topics that people, for the few weeks before, just kind of write down on a sheet things they're concerned about. And then lastly, and it's come up in different ways, we're moving more and more toward the idea that as a group, we're all sponsoring each other. Yes, I'm Pete's sponsor, but if Pete's got a problem I can't handle, I do not hesitate to go to somebody else. And I don't really believe we're anonymous from each other. If a sponsee says to me, I'm going to tell you something, and you absolutely can't tell anybody else in the world, I tell them, I don't want to hear it. Because what if you tell me something I can't handle? I need help. And so I do think that there's a transition going on in this fellowship, at least in some groups, from that thing of the individuals just sponsoring the individual, and nobody knows how that's going, to know we're the group, we're on to help each other, and yeah, I'm your sponsor, but we're all kind of in this deal together. So that's it.
Thanks, Mike.
I'd like to thank everybody who shared and everybody who's come to the meeting. As we close our meeting, I just want to remind you that what you've heard is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer. We can kind of make a... Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, and thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Keep coming back and worship your work at the Lord.
Where are you going now?
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Here, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks. I appreciate you being here.
I'm John, by the way.
Shut down. Oh.
I'm here by myself.
I know.
I'm very afraid.
You know that Eleanor
is my number two program. It came in one year after AA. So both of those programs are the long ones, you know. And they're the ones where I learned how programs work, how sponsorship works, how it works, how everything, you know, everything in those programs, you know. That led to that, you know. But I know that one of the things that led to it was they recommended I go to international and I get a priority to go to international conference. Whether I had the money or not, it was irrelevant. Whether I had the time or not, it was irrelevant. Just make the arrangements and go, you know. And that was one of the suggestions. And the other suggestion was to go to call more than one person, which is where I got the idea of having more than one person, you know. And I forget what the others were, but anyway, you get the picture. That I gradually matured in my essay program after getting my physical sober. Not that I'm well. My sober doesn't mean that. But without my physical sober, I continue the remorse and the guilt and the... What's the triad? Remorse, guilt, and depression, you know? If you're getting those, so you're not going to get any triad whatsoever. But as long as you're physically sober, then you can get one. You can get one, you know? So that's been my story. And, likewise, I hope I feel like a birthday party. So maybe we can get in touch more in the future.